Today is Friday, June 26, 2020, and welcome to the 24th episode here on the Sports Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Zuccala, and as promised on Wednesday's episode, today's episode will be mostly a draft lottery preview episode. Our first two segments are just going to be about the draft lottery. The first one being a complete preview of what could happen tonight. As everyone gets set to see what happens to one of the most interesting draft lotteries ever to be had. It's up there 2005. But that's what our first whole segment is going to be about. As well as segment two will be about the lottery itself in ways such as I found this article about how it's changed over the years. And I'll explain to you guys how it changed. Mostly the most changes that happened was after 2012, because the first one in 95 and then up to 2012 basically stayed the same besides 2005. That I have to make that clear, besides 2005. And I actually have this, and this script I made today is 13 pages long. I can't remember if this is the longest one yet, but it might be up there. And then I only have three segments today because I literally spent half an hour making this script. Half an hour plus. Usually scripts only take me max half an hour. But this one took me a long time. And I said, there's so much stuff here. There's 13 pages of notes. I'm pretty sure it will take me over an hour to get through these, all this plus my thoughts and opinions, right? So then I also looked up for segment two, the winners and losers of the draft lottery and in certain years. And we have a few teams that have been A winners and, you know, obviously B losers. And we have some honorable mentions and dishonorable mentions too for that segment. Then finally, there's lots of other NHL news to go around, but I was just like, there's already too much. For one, I wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame inductees. And I, you know, everyone who listens to this regularly knows I wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame inductees. I might leave that to Monday if there's nothing else going on, or I should probably make a case to open that up for Monday. Get my late opinion, because I was not happy, if you guys can recall back to last episode. So third segment and the last segment today will be the NBA. They have announced, they announced that they have, they're finalizing their plan. And we also have a time and date for when they will be releasing their schedule for the eight games that are left to be played for each team. So I'll tell you when that is. And finally, with the basketball segment, Vince Carter finally retires in the NBA. I talked about it a bit when they kind of announced the teams who will be going to Florida. And I kind of said, well, Vince is done. We're going to finally go into what people have done to thank Vince and kind of career wrap up his career in a short little, a few little points and, just basically points I have here about Vince and his NBA career. So let's get this. What I'm hoping is going to be an hour long. Who knows? This could be 45 minutes. I hope it's not, because I don't think it is. But let's do it. Let's get right into this episode number 24. Draft lotteries tonight. Let's get into it. Okay, so tonight is the big night. The draft lottery, phase one draft lottery, which could be out of two, is happening tonight. Probably at the Sportsnet studio, or where, I don't know where it's going to be held. It could be at Sportsnet. I don't know. I mean, it could be also online, but they always do this at Sportsnet. But I mean, I feel like they'll get a lot of backlash if it's in Toronto. But I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be done tonight. Because now I just had this thought now. I'm like, how is this going to be done tonight? Because usually, and there is videos online. You could look it up, because they post the video online after the lottery's done. Is that everyone is in the room for when they draw the balls. Not everyone, but If you go on the video, it's like Bettman. It's three guys from an accounting numbers company. I forget which one they pick. Bill Daly's also in. Bill Daly? Yeah, Bill Daly, I think, is in there, deputy commissioner. A few members of the media who are not allowed to say who gets it until it's finally posted. The people that help putting the balls in the machine, which I think is one of the people that come from that numbers company. I'm going to keep using numbers company here because I don't officially know what it is. And they got camera crew and all that. I think they still have the videos on YouTube. They post it. So yeah, I'm like, how is that supposed to happen if we're in COVID? So I have a feeling this might be online, but I also have a feeling that it might be at the studios in Toronto or wherever it is. They could be at Bettman's house for all I care, but I'm just saying I know for sure they have to at least have the balls, the ball dropping and the picking, and they have to have the selection. What do you call that even? The lottery, technically, it's called. They have to have that with this amount of people in the studio, in the room, right? So I just had that thought. It'll be interesting to see what they do tonight. So tonight, one of the biggest storylines coming out of tonight is that tonight is a franchise-altering night for the Ottawa Senators. So let's get into it. So the hockey world tonight, it will be one step closer to learning which team will win the right to the first overall draft pick later this year. Today, June 26th, back before we had this coronavirus, tonight was supposed to be the date of round one of the NHL draft. Tonight, we'd welcome Rimouski Oceanic star Alexi Lafreniere to the pros and watch him and the rest of this year's draft. Class of hockey hopefuls hit the draft stage in Montreal upon hearing their names called. Instead, today we'll see phase one of the 2020 NHL draft lottery take place, a special production typically held in April, which will determine the draft order of the first three picks of the 2020 NHL draft. As the pandemic continues to drastically alter the world, and the world of sports for that matter, it also brings a lottery unlike any other we've seen before. So here's what you need to know ahead of the event, and I'm going to break it down for you. The NHL has mapped out a two-phase approach to this year's draft lottery, and why. Most of these notes that I found and I put in the script is for the people that might not be too knowledgeable over what's happened, or they're confused a bit about why, what's going on in this draft lottery. At the time of the season hiatus on March 12th, we had a tight playoff race on our hands with several teams still owning a mathematical shot, albeit a long one, at jumping into the playoff picture. By bringing back 24 teams in the NHL's return to play format and implementing a qualifying round that will determine the playoff fate of 16 of them right off the bat, the league preserves some of its playoff parity without completely eliminating those teams' odds. Phase 1 will include 15 teams, but 7 of them are actual teams, technically. When the NHL resumes playing, 7 teams won't be in the mix: the Detroit Red Wings, the Ottawa Senators, the San Jose Sharks, Los Angeles Kings, Anaheim Ducks, New Jersey Devils, and the Buffalo Sabres all found themselves at the bottom of the standings in March, thus making them lottery bound. But the San Jose Sharks being lottery bound is not true. For those who might not know, the Sharks' first round pick belongs to the Senators, and it's not protected in any way, shape, or form. It's fully Ottawa's pick. And Ottawa literally has a night to remember tonight, if it's a good one or a bad one, no matter what. The 7 teams highlighted above will be joined by the 8 placeholder teams. We won't know who those 8 teams are until the NHL resumes playing, while the winner from each of the following best of 5 qualifying series will move on into the hunt for the Stanley Cup. The losing side would wind up being one of those top 15 picks. Just for a reminder for you guys, the qualifying round teams and the series would be Pittsburgh versus Montreal, Carolina versus the New York Rangers, New York Islanders versus the Florida Panthers, Toronto Maple Leafs versus Columbus Blue Jackets, Edmonton Oilers versus the Chicago Blackhawks, the Nashville Predators versus the Arizona Coyotes, the Vancouver Canucks versus the Minnesota Wild, and the Calgary Flames will face off against the Winnipeg Jets. So what are the odds? So By including the 15 teams in the draft lottery, the NHL is still able to assign the same lottery odds it has used since 2016. I say here in my notes, phone on photo. I did not add this photo to my phone, so now I have to look it up. Yay for me. So, for instance, it's right here. Come on now. Oh, for heaven's sakes, give me a better photo. Thank you. So, seven teams, like I said, have odds to get into, or have seven teams that are not playing can have the shot at the first round overall pick, but also the other teams. But they have the same lottery odds as they would in any normal draft lottery. So the 15th team, which is known as Team H, will have a 1% chance at number one. Team G, 1.5. Team F, 2.2%. Team E, 2.5%. D, 3%. Team C, 3.5%. Team B, 5%. Team A, 6%. So I don't know. This is what the photo of the NHL.com gives us. So I have a feeling that if they flip the cards tonight, and if that's the way they do it, which they usually do, I have a feeling that those cards would say Team A, Team B, Team C. Unless they just say placeholder. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but they'll probably still flip the cards and they will still have something on them. I'm going to guess. So then we move on to the teams that are not in the playoffs or the qualifying round and are just in the draft lottery because they're not playing in the 2014 playoff. Buffalo will have a 6.5% chance. New Jersey will have a 7.5% chance. Anaheim will have an 8.5% chance. Los Angeles will have a 9.5% chance. The Ottawa Senators with the San Jose Sharks pick has 11.5% chance. The Ottawa Senators normal pick has 13.5% chance. And the Detroit Red Wings have an 18.5% chance of getting that first overall pick. Speaking of the Sens, they looked poised to be Friday's biggest winners. The Detroit Red Wings, based on their last place position in the standings and their 2.75 points percentage, have the best odds at winning based on any one single entry, which is, like I said, 18.5%. But this really is the Ottawa Senators draft lottery to lose. The Senators are prime positioned to claim number one spot as they have two horses in the race. They own both the second best, like I said, 13.5, and the third best, 11.5% chance. Those are the odds, giving them a combined 25% chance at the top spot. Sens fans will also note that they own the Islanders' first-round spot, but it is lottery-protected. I thought it was top three protected. Is it? Anyways, so really, I actually have to look this up now. I'm so sorry, y'all. I honestly thought... Oh boy, I have terrible typing. I gotta look this up now. Is it lottery? Here we go. I'm about to check. Yeah, no, it's top three protected. Let's go. So it's top three protected. So Ottawa will have three picks in the first round this year. The best case scenario for Ottawa is if the Islanders lose the qualifying round, it is still, they're playing the Florida Panthers, right? I think that's what I said. Yeah, Florida, I don't think they have much of a chance, to be honest. I mean, if they win, it's great. But if you look at it, they're probably going to win. If they lose, though, that's fantastic. And they just have to lose if phase two has to happen. Let's just hope they just don't win one of the top three spots, because then it's Ottawa's pick right away. I would love them if they phase two for like the third overall pick, and like that pick is like, I don't know, give it to, who was the worst team? Montreal? We'll just give it to Montreal, and then the Islanders come up with like number eight. That would be fantastic. Okay, whatever. Let's continue going. So like the odds that I just read, they will use the same method as 2016, like I said. Amid so much change, this stays this part stays the same. It's just like the past few years since it was implemented, like I said, in 2016. Three separate draws will be conducted to determine the number 1, 2, and 3 pick in that order. Each lottery team is assigned a sequence of numbers. The higher your odds of winning, the more sequences you are assigned. As the numbered lottery balls are drawn at random, the sequence for each of the top three picks is matched with a master list of numbers assigned to teams. If you actually watch those videos of them picking the numbers of the balls, their book is massive. I don't know why. But I don't know why it's so big, but it is. It's because they have numbers for every single team in all the different combinations. I don't know how many combinations are for each team, but there's a lot. I remember the book being big for some reason. If all top three picks are awarded to bottom seven teams this Friday, we won't need a phase two. And that's pretty obvious. If all three picks land with the Red Wings, Senators, Ducks, Kings, Devils, and or the Sabres, then there won't be need for phase two. Picks 4 to 7 will fall into place based on the standings among those bottom seven teams. Based on this, the Red Wings will pick 4th at worst, while the Senators are guaranteed top 2 picks in the top 6. And I don't know. I don't know if this goes on much anymore about the Sens and their top 2 picks, but as a avid Sens fan, you could say, for me, I'd say the best scenario coming out tonight is at least if we get 1 and 2. That's the best. Obviously, you can't deny that. I'd be even happy if we get 2 or 3 and 4. 5 and 6, I could even still be a bit happy with. I mean, we'd all want Lafreniere. There's no question about that, right? But even if we do pick up 5 and 6, I'd be mad, but I wouldn't be that angry. This draft lottery is stacked, or this draft class is stacked, and I don't think anyone could argue with you about that, you know. Although another thing tonight is, I'll be fine if Detroit gets number one. The only team I don't think deserves number one is the Sabres or the Devils, because the Sabres, yes, they've had tough times, but that's just because they're poorly managed and their ownership just kind of sucks. The Devils, they've had enough first overall picks in the past. I mean, if they pull an Oilers, man, I'm out of here. Like, come on, you know. But as long as a placeholder team is not 1-1, maybe even 2, I'm fine. A placeholder team can be 3. I'm fine with that. But 1 or 2, I don't know about the thing about that. So let's get back to, what it would be like if the top 3 picks are just the teams aren't playing. In this scenario, picks 8 to 15 would then be assigned to the losing teams in the qualifying round, also based on point percentage as of March 12th. For example, should the Canadiens lose their play-in series, they would pick at the number 8 spot, but if the Pittsburgh Penguins lost, they would have to pick at number 15. So if a placeholder team wins one or more top 3 pick, prepare for a phase 2 and plenty of intrigue. Although it's not very likely, we've seen teams jump the lottery before. You know, one of the ways we can see this is look at the Blackhawks just last year. They finished the season in 20th place, 6 points out of a wildcard spot, and they entered the lottery with a 2.5% chance of landing a top pick. That same percentage is as placeholder Team E this year. They emerged with the number 3 pick of last year's draft, jumping 9 spots from 12 to 3. And that's what a lot of fans are scared about tonight. And that's one of the reasons why I don't like this draft lottery tonight. Is that a team that is placed in Team E or at the Team E spot can play for the cup, but as well can play for number 1. I'm not going to get much into that because I've already expressed my feelings about this draft lottery. It will be very intriguing for number 1. And number 2, I have a feeling this will happen tonight. And I don't think it's that, you know, it's that, like, out of left field, because it's happened. It's happened for multiple years since they implemented this new style. I don't know. I forget how many times this has happened, but I know it's happened because I think Carolina jumped up in 2018, right? Carolina jumped up in 2018. And then speaking of Chicago, you know, and it didn't happen in 2017, maybe. I don't know, but I know this is probably going to happen tonight at one point, that they'll announce that a team has bumped up, and then it'll just be heart rate meter off the charts. All right. So phase two, if it's necessary, will feature eight teams and each team with the same odds of winning. Yes. If phase two of the lottery happens, it will be conducted after the play-in round and would see all eight placeholder teams entered into one lottery draw per pick. If the placeholder team wins two of the top three picks this Friday, two separate draws will be required. The bottom seven teams that were a part of phase one will not be included in the stage, and their fates will have already been determined on Friday. Upping the intrigue is the fact that qualifying round teams will know well before play resumes whether a placeholder team is running for a top three pick. Cue the tank talks. Yeah, that's another thing I don't like, is that doing this now, there can be a team like Montreal who can say, well, the Penguins, we have no chance against them. Let's just throw it out the window. Let's just try and see if we get number one. You know, we have 12.1% chance of getting number one. Or is it 12.5? Yeah, that's my last point. I spoil it for y'all, but every team will have 12.5% chance. So I could see teams just saying, let's just throw the cat in the bag here. Is that the saying? And let's just do it. You know, let's try and go for that number one pick instead of getting the cup, which that's one of the reasons I don't like this draft lottery. It's kind of dumb, to be honest with you. But there is a chance for some really a whole lot of stupidity. Before the draft lottery guidelines were released, there were some concerns that an expanded playoff bracket and a rejigged lottery could perhaps add up to the possibility of a team both winning the Stanley Cup and the draft lottery. This will not be the case, for obvious reasons. It is still entirely possible, though, that a really good team could win the rights to the top prospect. Let's use the Pittsburgh Penguins, for God's sakes. The winningest team not rewarded an automatic berth into round one, as an example. At the time of the season stoppage, Pittsburgh, the Penguins were third in the Metropolitan Division, fifth in the Eastern Conference, and seventh in the entire league with a postseason berth, but all guaranteed back in March. Yet, based on this year's format, they still have to earn their way into round one via a best-of-five qualifying series against the Montreal Canadiens. Should the Penguins lose to the Habs, and listen, I think it's a possibility. It's all a possibility. I have a few Habs fans that I know, and, you know, I have a few of them that say, there's no way, we have no chance at all. But then I have a few that say, we have a chance to beat Pittsburgh. And I said before, Carey Price can steal a series. Any goalie can steal a series. And if Carey Price is hot, oh boy, Pittsburgh might have trouble. And Pittsburgh's goalies have not been all that hot, really. I mean, Christian Jarry has been good, but him and Matt Murray have been going in and out of the crease this whole season. So their goalie situation might be a bit difficult compared to what Montreal has. So if the Penguins lose the Habs and a placeholder team is awarded the number one pick, suddenly there's a 12.5% shot that we could see Lafreniere suit up alongside Crosby next season. How dumb would that look? How setup is that? You know when they talk about how it's a setup that Bettman doesn't want Canadian teams to win the cup? This would really look dumb towards that type of, you know, thinking, about people that think about that. You can map out a similar route for other top-ranked teams that just barely missed on a return to play bye, such as the Oilers, who find themselves with Connor McDavid. Once again, I mean, that would be sick, but how dumb would that be? Or the Leafs. I've talked about the Leafs doing that. Like, how dumb would that just look? The funny thing is that the Leafs might just turn disappointment into another entry-level jackpot. They traded their first-round pick, which is the property now of Carolina, but it's top 10 protected. So Kyle Dubas was actually doing something smart. I don't know if Kyle Dubas made the trade, but that is something smart there. Because if it does become number one, it's the Leafs pick. And then how stupid is it? For those who are wondering, the draft date, the actual draft date is still up in the air. We do not know when it's going to happen. Obviously, it will happen between the time of the end of this season and the start of next season, for say. So it could be determined in November or October, most likely November, beginning of December, that time. That's the time I could think of. Because I think August, September, maybe even a bit of October, I think they'll still be playing. So most likely, I'm going to say most likely November or maybe even start of December. And for those who are wondering who is up for grabs tonight, the as per mentioned, I talked about the winger Alexis Lafreniere, known for his smarts and his complete skill set. He'll be a game changer for any team that will draft him. If you want to look up who he is and what has he done, I would say his best work was at the World Juniors. Look at him. At the World Juniors, great hand die, like he scored there against USA in the first game. He's a physical guy. He's not scared to, you know, hit it, make a check. You know, you see that too with a lot of younger guys and younger draft picks. I mean, it is junior. Don't get me wrong, it is junior. I'm not saying it's the same as the NHL. No way. But you see a lot of the younger guys. You know. These guys now, her first overall picks are now kind of the skill set to just, you know, they just have the puck skills and all this. Lafreniere can hit. He could be physical if he wants to. And that's what's going to be pretty interesting to see if he could do that with his jump to the NHL. Can he still be the physical person he was in the World Juniors and in junior, you know, in the NHL. So, but if you do want to go watch his highlights, I suggest you watch the World Juniors because he was just amazing there when he played for Team Canada. Also, number two and three, they're projected to be Quinton Byfield or Tim Stutz. I've heard Stutzley, Stutzel. I don't know what it is. Whatever, those two are projected to go somewhere between two and three. I don't know what order. There's been a lot of rankings that said Stutzla has been two, Stutzla has been three, Byfield's been two, Byfield's been... So it's really up in the air. It's depending on what the team thinks. And also, both of them are very strong skaters for that matter. Byfield being a big guy too. Byfield, I think, still has one more year in the CHL to play, unless he does make the team, which might happen. But if he does... He won't be sent down to the AHL. If he has to, he will be sent back to play in Sudbury. And then number four is projected to be Jamie Drysdale. And he's going to be probably the first defender off the board. Personally, once again, being the Sens fan, if we get if we get one and four, obviously you go Lafreniere one. I think you should get Drysdale at number four. If we do go actually number one and two, I think we should pick up Drysdale no matter what, even if we get one and two. Now, somewhere also in my body, I think we just pick the best two players, which Pierre Dorion has said, whatever is up in the draft, we pick. So I'm wondering whether or not he meant that personally. He has says we are a team before on live television. So him saying we'll take the best two players, I don't know. But no, there's a lot. Listen, there is a whole lot of skill in the first 10 picks of this draft lottery. And it's going to be very interesting tonight to see if we have to have a phase two, which to me personally, it's most likely to happen than not. But I would love if it wouldn't, because it would actually just make this seem a bit more authentic, would it not? So yeah, that's all I have for tonight's preview of the draft lottery. When we come back into segment two, I'm going to tell you guys about how it's changed over the years, and as well as who are the biggest winners and losers of the draft lottery since it's become a thing in 1995. So we'll be back with that. Okay, so 25 minutes of draft lottery preview time, and I'm going to estimate that this will be another 25 minutes of draft lottery talk. So like I said before going to break, this segment's a bit more, I named this draft lottery stories. I don't know what that means, why I typed it. Once again, I was tired by the end of it, so I was just naming stuff just off my head and draft lottery stories came up, and that's it. I just left it because I was too tired and I was kind of done with making this script. So draft lottery history. For those who are wondering, the draft lottery has only been around since 95, and we'll get to that in a second as we actually start this article now. So like I talked about, and this is going to come up in the for this segment a lot, is that tonight the future of some NHL teams will be determined by the draft lottery as it takes place. The second part of it, well, may not happen at all, because this year's version of the lottery has been set up in a unique way to involve 15 teams before 8 of them have even had their seasons come to an end. We'll know what that looked like after today's draw. Sorry, it says Friday here for some reason. But we may not know which team specifically, or we may not know which team specifically will be picking there. What? More on that a bit later. But though this year's change is likely a one-off adjustment in response to the COVID-19 season interruption, the lottery has come in a few different forms since it's first instituted in 1995, like I said, where at first it was much more likely for the last place team to hang on to the number one overall spot. Nowadays, we could see a team. Nowadays, that team could slide all the way down to number four. It's much more exciting and made for a TV event than it was in the early days. As we look at some of the action, as we look forward to some of the action through the lottery tonight, which can be watched on Sportsnet at 8 p.m. That's not a plug because that is true. Here's a brief look at the history of the NHL draft lottery and how it's changed over the years. So it really didn't change from 1995 until 2012. So let's get into that. While the NHL drafts have been going on since the 60s, the yearly draft lottery, as we know, it didn't start until the mid-90s, like I said, 1995. So in 1995, the NHL instituted the lottery for the first time in an attempt to dissuade teams from tanking for the top pick. Prior to this, the draft order was determined by regular season finish, with the first round going in inverse order of the standings. So it was more exciting than before because now there was three there around the top of the draft, but movement was still limited. Teams couldn't move up more than four spots in the draft, so the only teams eligible to win the first overall pick were the bottom five. Likewise, no team could move down more than one spot from the regular season finish. In fact, the Los Angeles Kings won that first draft lottery with the seventh best odds. So they moved up to pick number three, where they got Aki Berg. They had the lottery rules granted the winner with the first overall pick automatically. The Kings would have gone Byron Berard, while the last place Senators would have fallen to number two and likely ended up with Wade Redden. Wade, who was actually then traded to Ottawa before his rookie season anyways. Byron Berard, famously known as not wanting to play at all a game for the Senators, kind of like I said about Stefan Nosen. Like I said, like I put the joke in the last podcast, no Sen. He never played a game for the Sens. So therefore, not a Sen. I'm going to stop. I have this big graph here of every lottery from 1995 to 2012. I'll get to that actually after and once before we move on to the draft lottery and what it is today. So then we move on to 98. The Sharks made the playoffs this season, but held Florida's first-round pick and won the lottery with it. However, the Sharks made a trade deadline deal with the Lightning, which allowed Tampa Bay to swap first-round picks. After losing the lottery, the Lightning went through with the swap and picked up Vincent LeCavalier first overall anyways. In 99, of course, people know this as the Sedin draft, when Canucks GM Brian Burke works some trade magic. The Lightning, holders of the first overall pick after the lottery, traded it to Vancouver, who worked a couple of other deals that ultimately landed at picks 2 and 3, with Atlanta holding number one. The Thrashers took Patrick Stefan, the Canucks took the Twins, and the rest is history. 2002, Florida won the lottery and the right to choose first overall, but dealt the pick to Columbus and moved down to number three. The Blue Jackets took Rick Nash, while the Panthers got the guy they wanted anyway, Jay Bouwmeester at third overall. As a part of this swap, the Panthers also had the option to swap first-rounders with Columbus in 2003. But that didn't happen because in 2003, the Panthers won the lottery again and moved from fourth overall to first. But for the second year in a row, they traded the first overall pick, this time with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh then took Marc-Andre Fleury, while Florida selected Nathan Horton third overall, the pick acquired from Pittsburgh in that swap, which made sense since Florida had Roberto Luongo at the time. But can you imagine the same team trading for the first overall pick in back-to-back seasons today? It wouldn't happen, I don't think. And in 2005, in case you forgot, there was no worst team in 2005 because there was no season after all. And I mentioned this in the last segment. In this draft lottery, teams were given 1, 2, or 3 balls based on team success from the previous 3 seasons. There's a whole article, I think, on NHL.com. Or you just look it up. Or it's on Wikipedia. And it tells you what the 1, 2, or 3 balls meant based on the team performance. I think one of them was based on how many times the team's made the playoffs in the past few years, how many times, or in the past 3, it's all over the place, but you could go on Wikipedia if you could read about it. The Penguins were one of the teams with 3 balls, thus giving them the best odds. They came away with the best player of a generation, and we all know who that is. Sidney Crosby. But man, Florida. I mean, yeah, you have Roberto Luongo, but would you like, I feel like personally, I would rather have Marc-Andre Fleury than Roberto Luongo now than, I mean, they traded him away. I can't really, you know, blast Florida for trading away a great goaltender and picking a great goaltender. Like, you know what I mean? At the time, I could agree with them no less. I could agree with Florida no less. But now, if I looked at it, I think it would be a bad decision for Florida to not pick Marc-Andre Fleury. And then we didn't pick Rick Nash. The first 2002 was a bit more stupid, to be honest with you. All right, let's get. So I'm now going to read this chart I found. And so let's go back. So there's 5 columns, sorry, on this. So it has obviously the year. That's one of the columns. They have the worst team, the lottery winner, of and their odds ranking of where they were, and also the number one pick, or who made the number one pick, and then the first overall pick. So in 95, the worst team was Ottawa. We already went through 95. LA, wait, hold on here. Yeah, LA won the lottery, but Ottawa then ended up making the first overall pick and got Brian Berard. 96, Ottawa was the worst team. Ottawa won the lottery, and Ottawa picked Chris Phillips. I think that's the last time Ottawa shows up here in this list, because after that, they made the playoffs. 97, Boston won. Boston was the worst team. Boston picked Joe Thornton. Where's Joe now? San Jose. Tampa Bay, like I said about Tampa Bay, they traded the pick with San Jose, and they got Vincent LeCavalier. That somehow rhymed. 99, the worst team was Tampa Bay. Chicago won the lottery. Atlanta somehow, I guess they traded and got Patrick Stefan. It might be one of the worst picks they've ever made. Well, they made lots of stupid picks, but let's move on. 2000, Atlanta was the worst team. The Islanders won the draft lottery, and they picked Rick DiPietro. 2001, the Islanders were the worst team, but Atlanta won the lottery, and they picked Ilya Kovalchuk. Atlanta, again, was the worst team in 2002. Florida won the lottery, but we heard they traded the pick to Columbus. Columbus got Rick Nash. 2003, Carolina was the worst team, but Florida won it again. Like I said, traded to Pittsburgh, Marc-Andre Fleury. In 2004, Pittsburgh was the worst team. Washington won the lottery, and they picked Ovi. 2005, like I said, Pittsburgh, there was no worst team. Pittsburgh won the lottery based on their balls. I'm never saying that again. And they picked up Crosby. 2006, St. Louis was the worst team. St. Louis won the lottery. They got Eric Johnson. 2007, Philadelphia was the worst team. Chicago won the lottery. Chicago got Patrick Kane. In 2008, the draft I went to when it was here in Ottawa, Tampa Bay was the worst team. They won the lottery. They got Steven Stamkos. 2009, repeat, except it was not Tampa Bay. It was the Islanders. Islanders were the worst team. They won the lottery. They got John Tavares. 2010, Edmonton was the worst team. Edmonton won the lottery. They got Taylor Hall. Edmonton then, in 2011, the worst team again. New Jersey won the lottery. I think I remember Edmonton having their pick, though, which is why they picked Nugent Hopkins. Edmonton picked Nugent Hopkins. In 2012, the Edmonton cheese happened again. Columbus was the worst team, but Edmonton won the lottery. Edmonton got Neil Yakupov, which I told you guys in my last podcast was out of the last 10 years, the bust of the last 10 draft first overall picks. So then we move on to 2013-14. and everyone in the lottery had a shot at number one. The first major change made to the lottery turned out to be a much better made-for-TV event. Now, rather than being limited in how far a team can move up in the order, the winner of the draft lottery could get first overall pick, and every other team would move down one slot. It was now a much more thrilling event. Technically, a team could miss the playoffs by a single point and not be at all that bad, and then win the lottery and have a shot at acquiring a franchise-altering player for free. This specific format was short-lived, but added another layer of intrigue for the proceedings. So in 2013, the Florida Panthers finished last in the league, but it didn't end up with the first overall pick. No, they did not trade it this time. The second last place Colorado Avalanche won the lottery and leapfrogged Florida, and the Avalanche took Nathan MacKinnon first overall, and the Panthers settled for Alexander Barkov second overall. Was that the... I think that was the year it was Steph Jones and Nathan MacKinnon who were very tight-knit, number one and two. To me, I remember them being... Steph Jones could have gone number one, Nathan MacKinnon could... I think Colorado made a good pick at picking Nathan MacKinnon. But I think what really set them apart was that they were both in the Memorial Cup. And I remember watching that 2013 Memorial Cup, and MacKinnon was way better than Steph Jones. Yes, Jones is a defenseman, MacKinnon's a forward, but they were two completely different players than what they were in the regular season. MacKinnon was just stellar in the Memorial Cup, winning it with Halifax, I think. I think Halifax won. And then Steph Jones, I think, wasn't he with Spokane? No. No, Portland. He was with Portland Winterhawks. He wasn't all that good. They weren't all that good at all. And then in 2014, the second last place team in the league won the lottery again. This time, it was the Florida Panthers with some good luck as they moved ahead of Buffalo Sabres. The Panthers took Aaron Ekblad first overall when the Sabres got Sam Reinhart, and Leon Draisaitl went third to Edmonton. And I think we all know who the best player out of that draft is as of now. So then 2015 came. And the odds of winning get a little longer for worse teams. To discourage tanking even more, the NHL changed its lottery odds in 2015 to make it a little harder for the bottom four teams to win it. Prior to this change, the worst team in the league had 25% chance to win the lottery, and the next three teams were at 18.8%, 14.2%, and 10.7%. But in 2015, those chances for the top four teams changed to 20%, 13.5%, 11.5%, and 9.5%. At the same time, the odds for every other team in the lottery improved somewhat. For example, the eighth worst team's odds improved from 3.6% in prior seasons to 6.6% in 2015. The team with the longest odds and prior to 2015 had a 0.5% chance of winning, but that doubled to 1% in 2015. This format for the lottery lasted just one season, but the new odds didn't really come into play. Edmonton, the third worst team that season, won the lottery with a smaller chance than it would have had a year earlier, and they came away with the man himself, Connor McJesus. In 2016, the top three picks are up for grab at the lottery. To further dissuade tanking and, heck, make the event even much more entertaining, the NHL changed its lottery again to put even more on the line. Odds remain the same, but rather than having a single draw to determine the first overall, multiple draws took place to determine the top three picks of the draft. In this new format, the last place Toronto Maple Leafs held on to the first overall pick with their 20% chances, but there was some interesting movement behind them. The Winnipeg Jets had a 7.8% chance, wound up with the second overall pick to take Patrick Laine, while fourth last Columbus would round up moving into the position three, where they will take Pierre-Luc Dubois. Had the lottery format not changed this year, the picks two and three behind Toronto would have gone to Edmonton and Vancouver, and man, oh man, would that have been nuts. And then 2017, we had the expansion. Vegas gets into the lottery. So there was no changes in the lottery format in 2017, but the league's brand new 31st team was involved before playing a game. The Vegas Golden Knights were given the same lottery odds as the third worst team in Arizona, but ended up falling as far as they could have, all the way to the sixth overall. That's because this lottery brought all kinds of unpredictability. None of the top three selections went to a team in the top three. New Jersey moved from fourth up to first. Philadelphia went from 12th to the second pick with a 2.4% chance. And Dallas moved from eighth to third, 4.6% chance. Nico Hischier, Nolan Patrick, and Miro Hiskinen were taken in these picks, followed by Cale Makar to Colorado and Elias Pettersson to Vancouver. this is what I'm scared about for tonight. Something like this that could happen. And I'm going to be angry if this happens. That's what I'm scared about. And then 2020, you know, I already went through this, but how can you conduct a lottery when A, your full regular season hasn't been completed, then B, the league returns with a 2014 playoff that includes a number of teams that would have been otherwise in the lottery. The league could have decided to just have a 7-team lottery, which I think they should have done, for those top three picks, but chose to involve 15 teams. And it, as always, this year, the difference this year is that the lottery could potentially possibly be done in two phases. The first on June 26th today, and the potential second after the best in five play-in round this summer. When the first lottery happens, the non-7 playoff teams will be involved. I've already said all this, plus the 8 placeholder teams. So it's possible we'll walk out of tonight's draw not knowing who holds a top 3 pick. Besides the teams that are, you know, that are, it is possible that all 3 could be placeholders, but it is possible that only one of them, but we'll know the other 2 teams. So that's the history of the draft lottery. And to be honest with you, I remember, you know, I remember when Edmonton kept winning and we're like, what is going on? What is this? You know what? I had a feeling they probably really changed it. I mean, Edmonton, you go back and you look at their 3 first overall picks from 2010, 11, and 12. They were the worst team in 2 of those 3 years. They won the lottery because they're the worst team in 2010. I think New Jersey traded their pick to Edmonton in 2011. So it's like really, you know what happened there. And then 2012, they were second. They were second worst. So it's, I think, you know, they could have changed based on that because they've won 3 straight. They don't want Edmonton winning anymore. But that's just a part of it. But you know what? Honestly, now, I do agree. If you just have the worst team winning all the time, it's not really all that interesting because then, like, you have the tanking. But I, you know what, tonight, you know, I don't really, like, it's really weird because, as a, once again, I'm going to say it again, Sens fan, it's a bit different tonight because we have 2 selections that could go in the top 6 no matter what. And there's a lot of stress on me and a lot of the Ottawa fans tonight no matter what, right? But you look at it and you say, why did I say that? That's not where I was taking this conversation. I was going on more with the fact that the past 2 years of Ottawa sucking. You know, we moved down to 4th that 1 year. Okay, whatever. You know, with Brady Tkachuk. And I'm fine with Brady Tkachuk because, like I said, Dahlin, I don't notice him that much. I mean, if you play for the Sens, okay, maybe. But I think Brady Tkachuk is better than Dahlin. And I feel like Brady Tkachuk should have got Rookie of the Year, a nomination at least. I don't think he would have won it over Pettersson. That's a fact. But he should have gotten a nomination over Dahlin. Last year, we gave our pick away to Colorado. They got Bowen Bram. I mean, whatever. But this year is a lot more, it's a lot more stressful because there's a chance that we could lose tonight. And we could lose to a team that doesn't deserve the pick at all, like Pittsburgh or like Toronto or like Edmonton, which that's making me mad. Okay, so this is going to be, I would no way finish our next article, I don't think, in time. So I'm going to stop it here. We're going to go into a new segment. I am going to have 4 segments today, I guess. So when we come back, we will have who are the biggest losers and biggest losers and biggest winners of the past draft lotteries. So we'll be back with that. Okay, so now let's get into who have been the biggest winners and biggest losers of the past draft lotteries. And there has been a lot. And obviously, we could start up with 5 years ago when we saw the Oilers struck it rich at the lottery. Deputy Commissioner Bayo Daly held up their logo, signaling their unofficial victory of Connor McDavid sweepstakes and prompting an unforgettably awkward and widely overanalyzed reaction from a soon-to-be NHL superstar. The Oilers had only 11.5% chance of going home with the top pick in the 2015 NHL draft, their 4th number one selection in the previous 6 years, to go back, right, 2010, 11, and 12. Sometimes the ping pong balls go your way, and sometimes they don't. In this case, the Buffalo Sabres lottery best odds resulted in a number 2 pick and a chance to grab Jack Eichel, who's not a bad consolation prize, but certainly isn't Connor McDavid. Combed through the past of the event, which states back to 95, and there are plenty of teams who were favored or shunned by chance. Ahead of the first phase of the NHL's modified entry draft tonight, let's take a look at who have been the biggest winners and losers in its history. And for sure, on this paper, after tonight, could either be on the winner's side or the loser's side, and that team will be the Ottawa Senators. They'll be winners if they take home one, two, three, maybe even four, and they'll be losers if they take home 5 and 6, maybe even 4 and 6, maybe 4 and 5, possibly. That could happen. So let's continue on this Oilers in 2015. So back to the 2015 lottery. And, you know, personally, I don't think it can be overstated how big of a win it was for the Oilers organization, even if they have made only one postseason appearance since drafting McDavid, though they'll make another should the NHL return from its pandemic pause. By jumping to the top spot with the third best odds, Edmonton secured their franchise-defining player, first since probably Gretzky. During his time in the NHL, the 23-year-old pivot leads the league in goals above replacement, according to Evolving Hockey, which is 108.5, well ahead of Mark Stone at number two, which is 96.2 points. He's had 469 in 351 games. He owns a Hart Trophy and 2 Ted Lindsay Awards. He's achieved all this besides suffering a career-threatening injury with his left knee that ended his 2018-2019 campaign and broke a clavicle in his rookie season. The Oilers' win was the Sabres' loss, no doubt about it. The sheer drop-off from McDavid to Eichel is debatingly enough to qualify the Sabres as one of the biggest lottery losers in history. Eichel is a star and was mounting a dark horse bid for the Hart this season, but McDavid has vastly outproduced him since joining the league. Eichel's goals above replacement is a tad more than half of what McDavid's 56.8%, and he's 24th in total scoring over that span with 337 points in 354 games. Great numbers, but they do not touch McDavid's. Then we go back to 2005 with the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins were certainly due for some luck, and they got it at likely the strangest draft lottery in history. Amid struggles on and off the ice, the Penguins were thrown a lifesaver in form of the number one pick in the 2005 draft. Coming out of a lockout that wiped the entire 2004-2005 season, the NHL had no standings to use for the lottery and opted to assign teams into three groups based upon playoff appearances in the previous three seasons and how many first overall picks the team had in the past four drafts. That was the other criteria. I forgot about that. Based on the system, the Penguins were one of the four clubs to get the maximum three lottery balls out of 48 of total, while 10 had two and 16 had one. Speaking of which, I think Ottawa had one, and they got the number 9 pick, and we picked Brian Lee. I don't know why we picked Brian Lee, but we did. Brian Lee, he's not playing anymore. He hasn't been playing for the past like 7 years. Despite having amongst the best odds to win, that amounted... What am I feeling in my script? There's what? Oh Jesus! It's a stupid stick from this reef that's beside me in my room that I do this podcast in. Okay, let's continue. Despite having among the best odds to win, that amounted to just a 6.25% chance, as each team had a shot at Sidney Crosby, one of the most highly coveted prospects in the game since Mario Lemieux. But everything came up Milhouse for the Penguins on July 22nd, 2005. The Penguins landed the number one pick, paving its way for its third, fourth, and fifth Stanley Cup wins in 2009, 2016, and 2007, led by Crosby, who has been unquestionably the greatest player of his generation. Since 2005, Crosby's 1,263 points in 984 games are second to only Alex Ovechkin's 1,278 in 1,152 games. Even though much of his prime was hampered by injuries, with 2 Hart trophies, 2 Harts, and 3 Ted Lindsays, 2 Rocky Richard trophies, and 2 Conn Smythes, he is by far the most accomplished selection in a rather weak 2005 draft, which produced Bobby Ryan at number 2, Carey Price at number 5, Anze Kopitar at number 11, and Chris Letang at number 62. In 2007, the Chicago Blackhawks. The Blackhawks had a franchise defying win in a few years before entering their first before earning their first Stanley Cup since 1961, but it didn't come on the ice. With the fifth best odds to end up with the top pick, Chicago leaped up in the draft board and the right to pick Patrick Kane, who became one of the most prolific scorers of his time. This year ties directly to one of the biggest draft losers in NHL draft lottery history as well, and we'll get to that later. For a bonus, we'll have Taylor Hall. The self-proclaimed lottery ball specialist has been on five teams that have won the top prize twice with the New Jersey Devils, Heischer in 2017, Jack Hughes in 2019, and three times with the Oilers, Nugent Hopkins in 2011, Neil Yakupov in 2012, and McDavid in 2015. In addition to being the number one pick overall himself, made by Edmonton in 2010, Hall is confident with his record. His record will stand. Never tell him the odds, though. An honorable mention, like I mentioned earlier, was the Colorado Avalanche, who jumped from second the first night, Nathan MacKinnon, in the 2013 entry draft, and the Winnipeg Jets jumping sixth to second to land Patrick Laine in 2016. So now we go on to the losers, and this is the team that was one of the biggest losers in 2007, the Philadelphia Flyers. It's hard to imagine a tougher year for the Flyers. Eight games into the 2006-2007 season, with the team off to a 1-6-1 start, general manager Bobby Clark resigned, and head coach Ken Hitchcock was fired. But the shakeup was made no difference, as the Flyers finished 22-48-12, giving them the most losses in franchise history, and the NHL mark for the biggest one-year drop in the standings from 101 points to 56. And how were they rewarded in complying the league's worst record, dropping to the number two spot in the draft lottery and missing out on one of the greatest American hockey players of all time, Patrick Kane? The Blackhawks, meanwhile, catapulted up to the first choice despite having the fifth best chances at 8.1%, paired Kane with Jonathan Toews to form the core of a modern dynasty that won three cups in 6 years. It's one of the biggest lottery wins in history, and from the other side of the picture, the Flyers ended up taking James Van Riemsdyk, a fine player in his own right, but he's not an owner of an Art Ross, Calder, Ted Lindsay, Hart, and Conn Smythe, nor is he the third most prolific point getter since entering the league in 2007-2008. As an added twist to the knife 3 years later, Kane was the one who silenced the Flyers crowd as he scored the Blackhawks Stanley Cup winning overtime goal in the 2010 playoffs. I remember him actually scoring that goal, and I just remember them celebrating. I'm like, well, the puck's not in the corner. It's in the net. I knew it was in the net. A lot of people didn't know on the ice, but I didn't see it go in the net, but I just said, if it hit the side of the net, it would have, you know, you would have heard it. It went wide. It would have hit the boards on the, like, you know, you would not have noticed that it didn't go in. Right. But no, I just remember that goal going, and I just wanted to share that. 2001, the New York Islanders. A year after surging from fifth to first at the lottery and using the top pick to take goalie Rick DiPietro over the likes of Danny Heatley and Marian Gaborik, the Islanders and GM Mike Milbury did themselves one better. Were they still wearing the fisherman jerseys? I got to look this one up now. I think they got rid of the fisherman jerseys pretty quickly, but not the... Hang on. I want to look this up now. Oh no, they're just no. They're wearing the really navy blue kind of rebrand after the. Okay, yeah, no, they had the fisherman from 1995 to 1997, but then they kept the jersey style but put their old logo back on. Okay, no, I got them. So it was not really that bad, but Mike Mulberry was a bad GM. Having finished last in the regular season with 52 points, the Islanders had the best shot at the top pick, 25% chance, and a chance to get game changer in Ilya Kovalchuk. But the hockey gods chose in favor of Atlanta Thrashers at a 14.2% chance odds with the number one pick and gave Islanders the second choice. The Thrashers seized the chance to pair Kovalchuk with fellow sniper in Danny Heatley. That stung, but another future star in Jason Spezza was left for the taking. It was the Islanders' corresponding move that truly sealed their status as losers that summer in what may have been the worst trades in NHL history. The New York Islanders sent number two pick, Zdeno Chara and Bill Muckel to the Ottawa Senators for Alexei Yashin. The Islanders promptly signed the Russian centerman to a gargantuan 10-year, $87.5 million contract that haunted the team's books through 2014-2015 following a 2007 buyout. Would the Islanders have made the same trade as had they won the top pick? We may never know. But it was made clear that Yashin failed to carry New York past the first round of the playoffs, while Kovalchuk, Spezza, and Chara shined elsewhere. Spezza with the Ottawa Senators before he got traded after 2013, and Chara after once again with Ottawa up to the 2005, I think 2005, 2006. And then we all know where he's now with Boston, and he's won two cups. Or sorry, one cup. Sorry. I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry, y'all. They won cup. My brain was just like, they won last year. No, they didn't. The Blues won. Bonus, the Pittsburgh Penguin fans in 2004. And yes, I'm aware that they did get Evgeny Malkin second overall, but there's no denying the Capitals, who finished third from the bottom, winning the lottery over the last place Penguins may have deprived fans from an opportunity to watch one of the greatest playmakers in NHL history line up alongside arguably the best goal scorer in NHL history. It's like something out of the NHL 20 fantasy draft, right? While Pittsburgh got Malkin, a future Hall of Famer who's no second fiddle to Crosby and was essential to the team's most recent three cups, Ovechkin, the top pick, is the league's leading scorer, league's leading point producer since the lockout, and by far the most prolific goal scorer, as he leads Crosby 706 to 462 in that category. Ovechkin's got his name on 9 Richard trophies, 3 Ted Lindsay's, 3 Hart's, and an Art Ross, a Conn Smythe, and a Calder. Malkin, meanwhile, has 1,076 points in 907 games since entering the league a year later, placing him fourth in points since the lockout, and is the owner of 2 Art Ross trophies, a Hart, a Ted Lindsay, a Smythe, and a Calder. To be honest with you, this is just me personally. I mean, they can't really rename it because it's Rocket Richard, one of the best players in the league. I feel like they might need to rename the trophy to the Ovechkin, because he's won it 9 times. The man has won it 9 times. I mean, that's up for debate, but me personally, I think in years from now, they might change that to the Ovechkin. I'm just putting that out there. Because he has the chance of beating Gretzky in goals. Also, the Penguins weren't really losers. Neither were the fans, who've been privileged to watch Gino and Sid the Kid tear it up in Pittsburgh. But come on, even the most diehard Penguins fans have to admit they would have loved to see what Ovechkin could have accomplished on Crosby's flank. And wasn't Ovechkin that hit Crosby that gave him the first concussion during the Winter Classic, or that wasn't it him? I can't remember. But if it was him. If they were playing on the same team, that would not have happened. Therefore, you know, where would Crosby be now? And a dishonorable mention was the last place Atlanta Thrashers, who missed out on Rick Nash and picked often injured goalie Kari Lehtinen at number 2 in the 2002 draft. I had to put that in there. All right. That's what I got for the winners and losers of the NHL draft lottery. We're going to move into our final segment here. This is going to be one long episode. Oh, boy. As we're going to talk about the NBA as they're going to finalize their plan to play in Florida. So we'll be back with that. I have talked for the NHL for over an hour now. I could end the episode right here, but I had to get this in there. As the NBA is finalizing its plans to resume season on July 30th. I'm just going to speed through this quickly, because I don't want to go over like 20 more minutes of just talking, but I'm going to kind of speed through this. The NBA and the National Basketball Players Association have finalized terms of the deal that will allow the league to restart the season at the Walt Disney World campus near Orlando, Florida next month. The league and the union made the announcement today. Many of the details were already known, such as how stringent health and safety stringent health and safety protocols would be in place for the 22 teams that will be participating, that no fans will be present, and that games will be held at 3 different arenas at the ESPN Wild World Sports Complex. With all necessary details completed and agreed upon, the league would say it would release the schedule for the 88 seeding games, 8 games for each of the 22 clubs, starting on July 30th. Later tonight, it will be at 7 o'clock Friday tonight. It's also on Sportsnet just before the draft lottery, or they'll release it online or whatever, as well as the national broadcast schedule for that portion of the season. We've worked together with the Players Association to establish a restart plan that prioritizes health and safety, preserves competitive fairness, and provides a platform to address social justice issues, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said. We are grateful to our longtime collaborator, Disney, for its role in playing host and making this return to play possible. We'd also like to thank the public health officers and infectious disease specialists who helped guide the creation of comprehensive medical protocols and protections. Those protocols will be critical given to the current state of the coronavirus testing in Florida. The numbers in the Sunshine State have soared in recent weeks, or in Orange County. The Orlando area has been at least 10% of all tests have come back positive for 10 consecutive days. That's more than double what the rate in that part of the state was from June 6th to 15th, and more than 10 times higher than the 0.9% clip of the positive tests from May 9th to 22nd. Earlier today, the league and the union announced that 16 of the 302 players tested on Tuesday. The first day of mandatory testing leading up to restart came back positive for coronavirus. Players who tested positive must remain in self-isolation until they satisfy public health protocols for discontinuing isolation and have been cleared by a physician. It has taken true collaboration between the league and the union. Special kudos to our executive committee and several other reps, along with the continued support and assistance from medical experts, public health officers, and many others, MBPA Executive Director Michelle Roberts said. Additionally, our platform in Orlando presents a unique opportunity to extend the ongoing fight against systematic racism and police brutality in this country. The league and the union announced earlier this week that addressing racial issues and inequality in the country will be a priority during the restart season. Yeah, and you know, I didn't want to get much into the, you know, racist issues and social justice stuff that was going on in America. I wanted to say that now, because I didn't want to get political. Really, I'm not really much of a political guy. You know what? You know, it's so tough as a sports journalist, a sports broadcaster to go on about this, because you could say one thing and then you're gone. You could be criticized. Like, look at Don Cherry, what he said. I mean, some people now, you know, what he said, to be honest, to someone that's around his age, that's fine. You know, they said that a long time ago. But nowadays, if you say that, and a lot of people heard that think that's not proper, he just left. And you know, they kind of just went their own ways, Sportsnet, CBC, Rogers, and him. And you know what, that's what I was scared about. I didn't want to say anything and just take my I'm a very careful person in talking about it, but I didn't want to say something and then I'm out the window, you know. So that's what I want to say. But the NBA is going to try their best at making it a priority during the return. Kyrie Irving does not like how they're returning because of the fact that he thinks it's a distraction of what's going on. It's for people to say, oh, there's basketball going on, no need to, you know, care about this anymore. But it will definitely be advertised. And, you know, a lot of the NBA players have been involved with the protests and, you know, all of what's going on, right? So, and they've been a voice. So I'm sure the NBA is going to try and continue that as well. That's all I wanted to say about that. Now, I talked about this when they announced the teams that were playing. Vince Carter's career is over. It's now officially over. He is retired. He announces his retirement after 22 seasons. The announcement came yesterday. He announced on his podcast that his 22-year NBA career has come to an end. The announcement was largely a formality because the 33-year-old Carter said he said many times over the course of the season that it would be his last in the NBA. His 22 seasons are the most in league history, and he became the first NBA player to appear in four different decades. Carter appeared in 1,541 NBA games, only behind Robert Parrish with 1,611 and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with 1,560 on the league's all-time list. He started his career with the Toronto Raptors, then played for the New Jersey Nets, now Brooklyn Nets, the Orlando Magic, Phoenix Suns, Dallas Mavericks, Memphis Grizzlies, Sacramento Kings, and spent his final two seasons with Atlanta, the Hawks. He earned $184 million plus U.S. dollars in a salary over his career, according to the website HoopsLife.com. Carter was acquired by Toronto shortly after he was selected fifth overall by the Golden State Warriors in the 98 NBA draft. He played just over six seasons with the Raptors before they traded the eight-time All-Star to New Jersey. He was public enemy number one in Toronto for a long time after he left, but fans have since warmed up to the man who has seen a very huge reasons of why Canada is now rich in young basketball talent. Inspired so many Canadian kids, two-time NBA MVP Steve Nash, who is formerly from Victoria, said on social media, pre-VC a couple of Canes in the NBA, and this year up to 20 were on NBA rosters. Thank you, VC. Carter won the NBA Rookie of the Year in 1999 and the famous dunk contest in 2000 while with Toronto. Toronto paid tribute to the former star on Twitter. Thank you for inspiring a nation to believe. Thank you for laying the foundation of basketball in Canada. Thank you for letting us fly with you. Thank you for a lifetime of memories. Love, Canada. That's what the team posted yesterday. Carter's first season was in the 1998-99 campaign, which was shortened to 50 games because of labor strife. His final season was shortened by the coronavirus pandemic. And the Hawks will not be a part of the 22 teams heading to the Disney Complex next month. It's kind of a cool situation for me because I came into the league on a shortened season and I walk away from the league on a shortened season, Carter said on the Winging It podcast. So for me, it's kind of a unique situation. Carter scored 25,728 points in his career, 19th most in the NBA. He had 9,420 with Toronto, the fourth highest total in franchise history behind DeMar DeRozan with 13,296, Chris Bosh with 10,275, and Kyle Lowry with 9,649. He averaged 23.4 points per game over his time in Toronto. He received a standing ovation during a video tribute in Atlanta's 131-114 loss at Toronto on January 28th. That would end up being his last NBA game north of the border, as an April 10th meeting at Scotiabank Arena was wiped out by the coronavirus pandemic. I had tickets to that game. And I've said it before on the podcast. I had tickets to that game. You know what? And I actually got paid back. And I actually got the money back, but it's to a credit of tickets I could buy over the next 12 months. So, I mean, Toronto's playing a very crappy team. You know, say if the Nets don't get better, if they're playing the Nets, I could possibly get some decent tickets. Because it was a lot of money that I paid. The Hawks quickly lauded Carter for what he's done, not just in 2 years with Atlanta, but over the totality of his career. Throughout his historic 22-year journey covering an unprecedented four different decades, his evolving career arc was perhaps like none other in league history. From top five draft pick to Rookie of the Year to slam dunk champion to superstar and eight-time All-Star, to Twyman Stokes Teammate of the Year and Valuable Role Player, the Hawks said on their website. Carter's last game was on March 11th, a contest the Hawks lost at home in overtime to New York. By the time that game was winding down, the NBA had already announced that it was suspending its season at the conclusion of the night's play after Rudy Gay, the Utah Jazz center, became the first player in the league known to test positive for the coronavirus. The moment was not lost as Atlanta fans who chanted "We want Vince" repeatedly with 19.5 seconds left in overtime, and with the Knicks' victory clearly decided, Carter checked back into the game at that point, inbounded the ball to Trae Young, then trailed the play as Hawks headed down court. Young flipped the ball back to Carter, who took an uncontested three-pointer. The shot went in. Carter threw his arms skyward as the clock ran out on the game a few seconds later. What many suspected would be the case that night became a reality. The clock had run out on Carter's career too. There were times probably in April I was like, man, I wish this didn't happen like that, Carter said. And then after a while, I was kind of like, it is what it is. Once I was able to kind of put aside and say, retire, Vince, you can go golf now. It's been easier. Carter helped USA win gold medals at the 2000 Sydney Olympics, highlighted by his dunk over 7'2" French center, Frederick Weiss, and his 2003 FIBA Americas tournament. He played college basketball for 3 years at North Carolina, starting his career there under Dean Smith. And Carter's retirement means there's no more Smith coach players left in the NBA. Half man, half amazing, all class. Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce wrote on Twitter in a message to Carter, "It's been an honor and a privilege for me to work with you." Carter said he'll still play the game of basketball for fun. It has long been expected that television networks will pursue him as an analyst, something he's dabbled in an NBA summer league in recent years. "I'm officially done playing basketball professionally," Carter said. "I'll play at home." Carter, this is my point, it's not in here, but Carter is actually finally the last player from the 90s and as well as the 2001 NBA All-Star Game to play an NBA game. Vince Carter, man, what a career. I mean, you know, it's going to be one hell of a future for Vince Carter, whether, like it said, analyst or, you know, maybe he just goes golfing. Who knows? But Vince Carter, man, one hell of a season. Obviously, I did not personally grow up watching Vince as a Raptor. I had more of a DeRozan. I grew up with DeRozan and Lowry for my time watching basketball and a bit of Bosch. But before he left for New Jersey, before he had, like, the hissy fits in Toronto, by the end of his career, it was somewhat of a fantastic time he had there. And I'm going to, like, a lot of the players now would not have been where they are without him, Steve Nash, mostly. You know, I mean, Steve Nash is Canadian. Vince Carter's not Canadian, but I'm just saying Vince Carter just playing for Canada and who he was kind of fantastic. I remember seeing highlights of Vince Carter in that dunk competition and me playing basketball. Now, I'm not good at basketball, but when I did as a kid, just, you know, in my basement, because I had the tiny net and the tiny little, I had a little foam ball, I would do dunks like Vince. I'd be like, I'm Vince Carter, you know? Just saying, I don't know what I said, but it was like that. I had Vince Carter in my head. Although I never watched him play with the Raptors, he's still in the mind of every Raptors fan in some way, shape, or form. All right. I have talked for now. This is a 13-minute segment plus now. Oh, my God. I've talked for an hour and 16. I got my closing. I have one actually note to say before I go on the closing, but then that's it. I'm out of here. So we'll be back with my closing. Okay, so now for what I missed. I could have put this in the NHL segment, but I just didn't. Ottawa Senators have released a statement for tonight, and I think I might have deleted the photo. Hang on here. Hang on. Go fast. And this is what it says. The moment we've all been waiting for is right around the corner. The 2020 NHL draft lottery. Our future is bright with what promises to be one of the most formational drafts in our club's history. With three picks in the first round, combined with the wealth of picks in subsequent rounds, the Ottawa Senators are poised to select some of the most exciting up-and-coming young players that have been widely reported as one of the deepest NHL drafts in years. Be sure to tune in to tomorrow, which is tonight, Friday, June 26th at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet to catch the excitement live. Also, stay tuned post-lottery for an announcement about something very new and very exciting that will provide frontline access to be sure to... something very new and exciting that will provide frontline access to what's sure to be some thrilling upcoming hockey. I literally sent that to my friends, and I literally then sent them the pictures of the possibility of new jerseys. My oh my, that will just finish the night for Ottawa. Okay, listen, Ottawa, I'll be mad if we get 5 and 6, but it will make the night better knowing the fact that Ottawa will have new jerseys around the corner no matter what. Listen, I have grown up with the jerseys we have now. I think we should have changed them when Adidas came up, because they made them worse with Adidas, to be honest with you. I mean, they're a bit cleaner somewhat, but they're worse, to be honest. They're worse. And, you know, my friend just sent me a text literally 4 minutes ago. He said, the Sens are about to drop a bomb tonight when they flip that card over and it's the side face logo. If it is the 2D logo, I might burst out crying. I don't know what will happen. Maybe not crying. It wouldn't be crying. No. It wouldn't be crying. I would turn into a bouncy ball and bounce off the walls. That will just finish the night for me no matter what, because it will happen. Hopefully, please. Please, Lord. I mean, I don't know what prayers do I say? Like, I mean, this could be huge, man. Huge. Anyways. All right. I got to go. I've been recording for an hour and 26 minutes. I have to go. So thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. If you're listening on Spotify, Google, Apple, Stitcher, CastBox, whatever. Thank you. If you want to listen to it here on the main channel or the main source, Anchor, Anchor, you could go to anchor.fm/podcastsportstalk and you listen to it there. All the episodes are there. I think all the episodes are in every other source that you could use. If you want to send me a message, you could go onto my Twitter, which is at Adam_Zucal. You could ask me a question on Twitter, or if you want to send in a voice message to me here on the podcast, you could click on the pinned tweet link on my profile. It will send you to the podcast website. A pop-up will show up and it will say, do you want to send a message? Pick whatever mic. It's just your default computer mic or your phone, whatever it's on. You could say whatever, send it to me, and I could answer your questions here on this podcast for you. So thank you guys so much for listening to this hour plus long podcast. I'm now going to calm down with a nice glass of lemonade and some food because I'm hungry. And I'll see you guys all on Monday. Have a good time, guys. Be safe out there. Whatever I say. And, you know, let's just have a good night tonight, please. It's Friday. Let's finish it off with a nice draft lottery. I'll see you guys all on Monday. Peace.